is pretty good way of doing it. An analogy for the doctrine of the Trinity that I would give them. Every analogy is going to break down. See, an analogy, by definition, by the way, this is Philosophy of Religion, lecture number 14. We're probably only going to spend about 5 or 10 minutes on the whole lecture. But an analogy, by definition, means there's differences between the two things that we're going to compare, but there's also similarities, so that we can understand one a little better by looking at this other illustration that we have more knowledge of. It can shed some light on the other thing, because there are some similarities. But that also means that there's going to be differences then, because they're not the identical thing. So all analogies eventually will break down, because you're going to find some differences where the analogies wouldn't apply. But the idea of water, a good analogy of the Trinity in some ways and very poor in other ways. There's a, what do they call it?
Evaporation.
I forget what they call it. There's a point with water where you can get it to the point where it exists in all three, in solid, you know, it's ice and gas, you know, steam, and liquid form, solid, liquid, and gas, where you can have water, I forget what they call it, the absolute blank point of water, but whatever the case, ice, which is water in solid form, gas, which is water, and it's gaseous, or steam, which is water in its gaseous form, and liquid water, which is water in its liquid form, all three of them are water, yet ice is not steam, and steam is not liquid, and liquid is not ice, okay? So to that degree, that's a pretty good analogy of the Trinity. The problem is, though, you can take the same water and freeze it, make it ice. You can take liquid water, freeze it, make it ice, then melt it, make it water again, and then boil it until it all becomes steam. And so the same water can change forms, and then it would be a good, that same illustration, that was a good illustration, a good analogy for the Trinity, all of a sudden, excuse the pun, but evaporates into a good argument for a good analogy for the Jesus-only movement.
Modalism.
Yeah, which the Jesus-only movement is a form of modalism, by the way. Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Because Jesus at one time, according to them, was the Father, then he became the Son, and now he's acting as the Holy Spirit. But God is only one person, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit are the same person, they would argue. So even the analogy from water breaks down a little bit. But here's another analogy that I'll give you that is a little stronger in some ways, but then in other ways it's still weak because no analogy is going to be perfect. A single-celled animal, let's say the amoeba, a single-celled animal is one being, one thing that exists. It's one being, and it's also one cell. Whereas a human is also one being, just like the amoeba is one being, one thing that exists, but the human is millions upon millions of cells, especially when it reaches the age of maturity. Now, if a single-celled animal had understanding, had reason, and was able to communicate, it might come up to the human and say, well, if I'm one being, and on one cell, you must be millions of beings because you're millions of cells. But then a human would say, no, I'm not. I'm one being. I just happen to have millions of cells. You see, humans live on a higher dimension than amoebas, than single-celled animals. And somehow, we can be one being but millions of cells, even though there are some beings that are only one cell. Well, God somehow lives on a higher dimension than us. We are one being and one person. Somehow God is one being but three persons. He lives on a higher dimension than us. God, the essence of God, God's being, God's nature, and His personhood, it only makes sense that it transcends our understanding in this area. That somehow God would obviously live on a higher dimension. He is the infinite creator. We are finite creatures. And all I'm trying to show is that there are some good reasons for believing the Trinity. That's number one. There's some hints at it in nature and all. Number two, it would seem to be necessitated that if there is an all-loving God that is also all-sufficient, then this God would have to be multi-personal. Couldn't be just a unipersonal being. But what I'm getting at more than anything else, when we philosophically look at the doctrine of the Trinity, we find that it is not irrational. It is not a contradiction. Yes, it goes beyond our reason, beyond human reason, to fully reconcile it. At the same time, it is not a contradiction. We're not saying God is one God but three gods. We're not saying that God is one person but three persons. We're saying He is one God, but somehow He is also three persons. And so what we're saying is the Trinity is not an irrational or an illogical doctrine. But the best reasons for believing the Trinity, like Thomas Aquinas said, there's some doctrines you can prove by reason, such as the existence of an intelligent God, but there's some things you can't prove by human reason, and Aquinas would include there the doctrine of the Trinity. That must be accepted by faith. Now, he's not saying a leap of faith like Kierkegaard. What he's saying is, once you find that there's good reasons for believing in the existence of God and good reasons for believing that He has spoken to us through the Scriptures, then you have good reasons for accepting by faith and on the authority of the Scriptures what the Scriptures teach, such as the doctrine of the Trinity. So we have good reasons for believing in the existence of God and that God has revealed Himself in the Scriptures. Since the Scriptures teach the doctrine of the Trinity, we believe it. All I'm getting at is that non-Christian philosophers who say that the doctrine of the Trinity is a contradiction, they have not proven their case, and we therefore have good reasons for believing in the doctrine of the Trinity as revealed to us through the Scriptures. And so that's our course in the philosophy of religion. Just give you a brief overview of the different lectures that we cover. We discuss religious experience, religious language. We talked about the failure of atheism and the failure of other worldviews besides theism. Then we gave four lectures on evidence for God, the existence of the theistic God. We talked about the problem of evil. We talked about the philosophical possibility of miracles occurring, such as the resurrection of Christ from the dead. We talked about some possible ways that Christians could reconcile divine sovereignty and human free will. And then we showed that the doctrine of the Trinity, though it may be illogical, it is not illogical. It may transcend, it definitely transcends human reason, but it does not violate human reason. It does not contradict itself. This is Dr. Phil Fernandez. Thank you for taking the course on the philosophy of religion.